We're having a special class about matzah baking. You guys know what this is? Show and tell. We have this little tool. Very good. It makes holes in matzahs. This is the modern tool we have today. You guys see what this is? A little bit of dough stuck onto the handle over here. Right? Makes it chametz. Yeah, this dough has been sitting here for 2 years already. So it's already...
And if you wash it off, it won't be chametz anymore.
That's partially true. I guess that's true. You guys know what this is? This is a brush with which we clean nails. All the people that are going to be dealing with the matzahs clean their hands very well to get the dough out from under their hands. So, like a surgical scrub. You guys know what this is? An egg. Very good. This does not go into matzah. We don't make egg matzah. We make matzah out of flour and water. So, let's begin. What is matzah? How do we bake matzah? How do we get the matzah? So, the Torah tells us, we'll do show and tell and hand it out soon. The Torah tells us we have a mitzvah on Pesach to eat matzah. It says, Shivat yamim tochal matzot. 7 days you should eat matzah. Torah says, don't eat any leaven and do eat matzah. From that juxtaposition, we derive that only things that can become leaven can also become matzah. In other words, only where there's a potential for souring is there a potential for good. The concept in philosophical terms is a great one. And in halachic terms, though, practically, that means you can't make matzah out of rice. It won't be kosher matzah. Matzah can only be made out of the five grains because only the five grains undergo that chemical process which we call leavening, which in halachic terms is called chimutz, or otherwise known as chametz. So, we're dealing with something that's volatile. We're dealing with dough, flour, mixed with water, that can become chametz. And if not for that, it can't be matzah. So when we're making matzah, we're going to have to ensure that it's kosher matzah and that it does not become chametz. How do we do that? So there are really three ways to do that, and we do all three. One thing that prevents leavening is putting it in cold water, keeping it in a cold environment. If you freeze dough, it's not going to turn sour. Another thing is if you keep working the dough, if you keep kneading the dough, it's not going to turn into chametz. And the final thing is if you bake the dough before 18 minutes, before that dough has a chance to rise. Now, this idea that it takes dough 18 minutes to rise is only true if you have flour and water. If you would add yeast, then it would rise more quickly. This idea that it only takes 18 minutes for the dough to rise is only true at room temperature. But if you're going to work next to the furnace, if you're going to work in a hot place, and then it rises more quickly. If you're going to add salt to your dough, if you're going to add other ingredients, so then that might cause the dough to rise more quickly. And that's why when we prepare matzah, what we're doing is we're mixing flour and water, and that's it. And we are going to work that dough every second from the time the flour hits the water until it hits the oven. And we're going to keep it in a relatively cool environment. We don't put it in the room where the oven is. We only bring it into that room when it's ready to go into the oven. It will not spend any unnecessary time next to the heat of the oven. It's in another room until it's ready to go into the oven. Because we do not rely on two of those three halachot. Even though technically if we would keep the dough cold, it doesn't rise, it doesn't turn into chametz. But we don't rely on that. Even though technically so long as I'm working the dough, it doesn't become chametz, we don't rely on that. We start, we put flour and water together, we turn on the timer, and then we start working that dough, and we get it out of the oven in under 18 minutes. So we apply both aspects. We do ensure that the room is relatively cool, or at least not warmer than regular room temperature. We do work the dough nonstop, but we do not rely on that and give ourselves extra time and go beyond the 18 minutes. We ensure that we finish baking the matzah in under 18 minutes. So let's begin with looking over how we actually get to matzah. Yes?
18 minutes from the time you start kneading? Or 18 minutes when you put it in the oven?
18 minutes from the second the flour hits the water. Or the water hits the flour. Okay. First thing we see here is a wheat field. beautiful green wheat field. we harvest the wheat when it is not yet fully ripe, because once it gets fully ripe, if you'd have a rainy day like yesterday, so then there are opinions that say that the wheat can start fermenting once it's ripened, even though it's out in the field. So we wait until the field is dry. We harvest the wheat before it is fully ripe. And here you see what a dry wheat field looks like, all yellow. And here, if some water would fall on the wheat kernels, so we run into a question, did it start fermenting? And what you see here is what happened about 4 or 5 months ago. The rabbis went out to the field to ensure that the wheat is dry before they harvest it. Remember, fermenting begins when the wheat or the flour comes in contact with water. So what we're doing is we're checking all the...
You don't need a rabbi to check.
You don't need a rabbi to check. You can check yourself. But traditionally, the rabbis were always actively involved in the preparation of the matzah. It's part of the mitzvah. And ideally, we try to be personally involved in the making of our own matzah. Aside from which, it's a very stringent halacha. It's the one place where the Torah says, don't even see it. The Torah says, don't even see chametz. So, over here, we take extra precautions. When we make matzah, usually we make the matzah out of white flour. We do actually sift the kernels. We take off the chaff. We don't make whole wheat kernels. Even though you could. Technically, halachically, you could make whole wheat matzahs, and some people do. So, we harvest the wheat, and then we sift through the wheat, because very often there are wheat kernels that have worms. So today they've developed this contraption where the contraption itself, I don't know how it works, but the contraption itself figures out which kernels have worms and which don't. And they undergo this sifting process. Next, we take the wheat and we grind it into flour. One year, maybe we should actually go and see how they do it. Now, there are two forms of flour. One is ground by hand, and the other is ground by machine. Ordinarily, after you grind the flour, so then the flour is hot after it's undergone the grinding process. So we leave the flour overnight to cool off before we use it. Again, the same idea. If we're going to have warm flour, so then it's going to ferment more quickly. we have this guy over here standing by a handmill. Some of the guys at the Mahon, we had a guy here a month ago who used to work at some kind of plant. I don't know if it was at the matzah factory or at the flour plant, but he was mining this handmill. This big guy, he was learning here. And he was, at nights, he would go there and do what you see this guy doing. He would get his workout working through the matzahs, and that was his job. You'll notice that we have these signs all over the matzah factory that say, L'shem matzot mitzvah. I'm doing this for the sake of matzos that will be eaten as a mitzvah. And the idea here is that the Torah says, U'shmartem et ha-matzot, I want you to watch over the matzahs. And our sages say, why does the Torah reiterate watch over the matzahs? Of course I have to watch the matzahs. The Torah tells me to be careful with them. Why does the Torah give me another commandment to watch the matzahs? Because the Torah is telling me I want you to do it for the sake of the mitzvah. So you might say, hey, why else would I be baking this type of cracker? So firstly, go down the block and you'll see that Matzot Yehuda, their factory is running all year long. And during the winter months, they make chametz matzah, which people do buy and eat as crackers. And now, for the last month and a half, and now they're already making matzahs kosher for Passover. So there is a market for matzahs that are not for Pesach. And anyways, technically we could rely on that, but we prefer not to. And that's why when you go through the matzah factory, Bezrat Shem, on Monday night, you'll see that the people are constantly saying, L'shem matzot mitzvah, and they make sure to say it when they start their shift. Every 18 minutes, everyone calls out L'shem Matzot Mitzvah. What we're going to do now is for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. Ideally, when we stack the flour, we do not put the bags one on top of the other. As you see over here, this is what we do not do. because then they would heat up, and we want them to remain cool. So we do not make piles of sacks like you see here. We put the sacks ideally raised from the ground, so if some water would spill, it wouldn't get our flour to ferment.
The sacks are only filled with flour?
Correct. We sift the flour before we use it, because traditionally, since the days of the Codex, the Shulchan Aruch, all the flour mills have worms. They have, the question is how many worms? But there are always worms in the flour. The flour that you buy in the store ordinarily undergoes three sifts before it hits the store. Three sifts at the end of the production line. It goes through many sifts beforehand. There's a final three sifts that they put it through sifting machines to get out the worms before it hits the stores. Very often you'll see that they have flour on sale real cheap. And very often the reason behind it is that one of the sifts had a tear in it, and those bags of flour are very likely to have a worm or two in them. It only underwent two sifts instead of three, and so a few of the worms get in. I don't know why they don't have to tell you that. I would make them tell you that, but I learned the hard way. We bought a lot of flour on sale, and we found a lot of worms. And then when we started looking into it, we discovered that that's very often the reason why they have sale on flour. Yeah, if you sift them well, yeah, if you sift the flour well, so then the flour is worm-free. So that's what you see over here in the picture, that the flour gets sifted after they've ground it. Now, we said there is flour that is sifted by hand, and there's flour that's sifted by machine. When you come to buy matzahs, so they might tell you, do you want Rashi matzahs or regular matzahs? So don't be fooled. This isn't like tefillin. Rashi is an acronym for Rechayim Shel Yad, hand milled. That's all Rashi means. I came there and I'm standing there scratching my head, and I said, what Rashi are you talking about? I don't remember Rashi having a special sheet. So, okay, then I learned. Okay, so so the grinding of the flour should be done for the sake of the mitzvah. And there's a discussion whether you can consider a machine as doing something for the sake of a mitzvah. And the idea is as follows. When I push a button, so you could say that's an indirect cause. That's you're not directly making the matzahs, but that's not so accurate, because we have a rule in halacha. Let's take on Shabbos. Let's say we have 39 actions that are prohibited. One of them is winnowing. How do you winnow? You wait until there's a wind, and then you throw the kernels in the air, and the wind blows away the chaff because it's very light, and the kernels fall to the ground. Now, if you did that, so then that's the milacha, that's the prohibition of the act of zore, winnowing, throwing the kernels into the wind. Now, you would say, wait a second, I didn't do anything, the wind did it, right? I threw it into the wind. The wind did the sifting. So here, the halacha really teaches us a concept that sometimes when we have koach acher mu'rav bo, when there's another force that's involved, but it's an anticipated force, so then we don't say, I didn't do anything. We say, you used the force that was here and was anticipated. For example, the Talmud discusses that when you shoot an arrow, there are two vector forces at play with the arrow. There's the force going up, and there's the force propelling it forward. And the Talmud discusses how much of the action of shooting the arrow is yours, and how much of it is nature, gravity, pulling it downward as the arrow kills someone. So it's pretty phenomenal when you read it in Talmud to see that the Talmud was discussing vector forces. But what we do see is that when I'm going to use a force that's readily available and that's obviously going to work with me, so then very often we consider that as part of my action. And if I have a machine that's on, and when I push that button, the whole machine is going to start making matzahs, so then there's room to say that if I push that button for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah, I will have made those matzahs for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. And that would apply to machine matzah, and that would apply to matzahs that the flour was ground by machine. You could say that the flour was ground for the sake of the mitzvah. if I said it before I pushed the button. It is an added stringency to buy everything handmade, and you pay for that stringency. Now, Rav Salant of Jerusalem, he was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and he held that machine matzahs are the preferable way to go. Because you have a greater assurance that it was done quickly, and it was done orderly, and it was cool. I'm not sure what he'd say today. The rabbi seemed to hold that today he would also say that machine matzahs is the preferable way to go. Speaking to friends of mine who work full-time at the machine matzah factory, I understand that the assembly line does not work in perfect order. It's not the way you would imagine, that you just push the button and picture-perfect cookie-cutter matzahs come out. Quite the contrary. There are many, many matzahs that come out that are problematic. And I personally went to matzah factories and I saw that there are many matzahs that come out that are not kosher, that come out of the oven. You'd think that with an assembly line and you have everything working, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal to see. And if you guys want, we can arrange a trip to a matzah factory, to a machine matzah factory. But it's not that simple. And there are other issues to be discussed. At the end of the day, I personally eat hand matzah and machine matzah. At the Seder, we do things over hand matzah, but we also bring out machine matzah. Again, we're relying on that understanding that pushing a button can also be done for the sake of the mitzvah. Yes?
So two questions. So you have regular matzahs, machine ground, machine made, rashi, hand ground, machine made, and then shmura, hand ground, handmade.
Right.
And so why do we hold like that for matzah but not for Sefer Torahs?
So we have to learn more about Sefer Torahs. The derivation for doing a Sefer Torah Lishma is more potent than the derivation for a matzah. As we discussed earlier, it's a discussion what Ushmartem et HaMatzot teaches us. Whereas Uchtavtam, Ktivatama, Lishma is a totally different derivation. But it's a good question. There is a Magen Avraham that suggests what you're saying, that maybe we should be able to make machine mezuzahs, machine-made mezuzahs, right? There were big rabbis who did suggest developing that direction. It's a legitimate question, right? Yes?
You're talking about Zorev, about the chaff in the wind being not directly caused by you, but the outcome is predictable, so therefore you are held accountable.
Well, we didn't say only because it's predictable, but also because the force was there when you made your action. The force was present. The wind was there when you threw it into the wind.
Because I heard an argument, not related to that, I don't think, but something about, like, if you have a dam,
right,
and then you lift the wall or something like that, and someone's there and he drowns, because of who you're not accountable.
It's an excellent question. Deserves a broad discussion, and we've gone too far off on this topic, but that's an excellent... No. That deserves a longer discussion. That's an excellent question. You're right. You're right, and the rabbis who opposed machine matzahs, that was one of their claims. Meaning that was there was a huge machloket about machine matzahs when they first came out, and that was one of the sources that they brought. But you understand... In Chulin, if I'm not mistaken. And Chulin and Avodah Zarah. In truth, maybe one day we'll be able to have a class about machines in Halacha. We want to ensure that the flour and water do not mix until we're ready to knead the dough. So the way we do it is we have a person sitting in a middle room, and there are two rooms, one to his left and one to his right. In the room to his left, let's say, they keep the flour. In the room to his right, they keep the water. And what they do is, the guy in the middle knocks on the window where they have the flour, and they pour in the flour. And then the guy from the water, he knocks on his window, and he pours in the water. So they prepare an exact amount of flour and water, as you can see over here. And you'll see it this actually Monday night. They have the scale, and they put a vessel which they filter an exact volume. We make the volume that one can make challah, the volume that one is obligated to take off challah from, either 1,200 grams or 1,250 grams. We say you shouldn't do beyond that because if you do beyond that, so then you might not be able to knead it well enough and ensure it doesn't rise. So we have an exact amount of flour, an exact amount of water. Usually they want more water because it's easier to knead the dough if there's more water in it. It might be better if they put a little bit less water in the flour because then the matzahs would bake more easily. Remember, the amount of water you're putting in is going to define the amount of time it has to sit in the oven. But okay, we have the same issue when it comes to the water. We need to take water that is cool. We don't want water that is warm. Just like we didn't want the flour that was freshly ground, we don't want the water that's fresh out of the stream. So we have a concept called mayim shelanu, water that rested. So we draw water before sunset and we leave it in vessels in the shade until the next day. And that way we ensure that the water isn't coming out of the hot ground. You're not getting warm water. So when we come to the matzah factory, Be'ezrat Hashem, when you walk in, you'll see on the top, you'll see huge vats filled with water. They take the water out of the faucet, they put them in these huge vats every afternoon, and then they spend the night in the vats to ensure that they're cool, they're room temperature, and then we can use that water to make matzah. Here you see the vats in the room. Outside the room, they have bigger plastic vats where they store all the water that will fill these vats. Now, in order to ensure that no dirt or no bugs come in with the water, we have filters over the faucets that filter out the water so that what comes out is pure water. So now we have the water again, you see they measure an exact amount of water and the flour. And here you see the guy with the water. He's waiting by his window. When the guy in the middle will knock, he will open his window and pour in the water. And again, we want to ensure that the flour and water don't mix until it's time to mix. We don't want the flour flying into his room, and we don't want the water splashing into the other guy's room. You see this guy, his big arms? That's because he's going to need the big dough in that basin. Okay. Here you see him. The guy in the middle, and here you see to his left is one window. To his right is another window, which you can't see right now. You'll see it this Hashem Monday night. So we need the dough. When the water hits, one. We said that's the room where one room is the guy with the water, one room is the guy with the flour. They're in separate rooms and the window's closed.
Is it like that in the factory?
Yes.
You have like one person in one room and one person
in the room. Right.
And one in the middle.
And one guy in the middle, yeah. Yes.
How do you do something with Shem Shemayim if you're also being paid for it?
Think about it. After the guy kneads it into dough, so he does step one. He makes it into one glob of dough. Now you have to knead it some more. So they have these special machines, tables, which have a long metal rod attached to them on a hinge. And what they do is they put the dough down and then they start banging down on the dough with these metal rods. And that's what you see here in the picture. There are young men and basically it's like rowing a boat. They keep banging down on the dough and turning it around and banging it again until they've kneaded the dough into one long piece like this. Now, you have a series of tables where people will roll out the dough. The guy at the head of the table takes this long cake of dough, right? You have this long piece of dough, and he cuts it up into small pieces, which he hands out between the people. Each person has his own rolling pin, and they start rolling the matzahs. They start rolling out the dough, flattening out the dough.
Is this shawarma matzah, or just every matzah factory?
Let's discuss that later. So we flatten out the dough. We are Ashkenazim. Ashkenazi custom is that our matzahs have to be pretty thin. We technically, the halacha says, until a tefach, until this thickness is okay. But our custom is to make them much, much thinner than that, as we know. Our custom is to make them so thin that they're basically crisp and hard, not like the Yemenites who have nice, soft pita matzahs. And we make ourselves, we've rolled out the dough, as you see here, and they pass the dough from person to person. These people are experts at rolling the dough. And now let's understand what's so complicated about rolling out matzah dough. Yes?
Can you be yotzei with the other, like, Yemeni matzah and vice versa?
You shouldn't. It's against our custom.
Is smarter than the Yemeni matzah?
I don't know. Okay, now, there are certain things that will disqualify a matzah. If the matzah is bent over like this, if it's folded over, even if the matzah has a little fold, if the matzah has a crease that runs through both sides, so then there are opinions that that disqualifies the matzah. What I mean by a crease, like a little wrinkle. No, not a bubble, a crease, a wrinkle that that can be seen on both sides. Sometimes when you make a flat thing, so just like between my two fingers, you see this little fold? So if it shows on both sides, so there are opinions that that at least that part shouldn't be eaten on Pesach. So most people don't go with that opinion. But the expert matzah makers, when they roll out the dough, they roll it out so it's completely flat. There are no creases, no folds. Usually when you roll out thin dough, what can happen is that the piece of dough does this.
Okay.
And it's the slightest little fold in the matzah, but when you're dealing with very thin dough, and as you're rolling it, you keep pushing it back and forth, it's very natural that a little piece will cling to another piece. And that's where they make it look very easy. The people standing there, they roll out the dough, it seems like it's the easiest thing in the world. But really, it's a skill, it's a talent. And they're rolling out the dough on these tables. When I was a kid, everything was wood. And we would have to sandpaper down the rolling pins. That was the kid's job. After, between shifts, they'd have extra rolling pins. They'd have like 150 rolling pins. And every time a shift ended, they'd give us, the kids, the rolling pins, and we'd work with sandpaper cleaning off the rolling pins to ensure there was no dough left over. Today, they have stainless steel rolling pins. They clean them off very nicely. All the tables are made of stainless steel, and they're very easy to clean. And what basically happens is, between shifts, every 18 minutes, they have a special team that comes in and cleans off all the tables. And meanwhile, they have another set of tables that are ready. So they start working on the other set of tables. So every 18 minutes... they switch tables, but they take a 2-minute break to clean off their hands, as we saw, with a special scrub, to clean under their nails to ensure no dough is left there, to clean off their rolling pins, and then they're ready to start again. It's very hard to work with gloves. This takes real skill. Just like women don't bake with gloves. It would be very hard. Yes?
About the Mayim Shalando, would it not be fair to assume that today when we don't really draw water from the ground and the water goes through a sanitation system where it's definitely been overnight, and on top of that the cold and the hot water are completely separate, there's no, you know, there's no problem about the hot water, so that there's not any chance of any warm water coming through there. So wouldn't it be fair to say that the water that's anywhere coming through the pipes of any plumbing system is pretty much mine below the water?
Yeah, that's a good claim. I'm looking, if I remember correctly, someone says that. Uh, I have to find it. If I remember correctly, that is said. It's logical what you're saying, right? But I don't see it right now. No, that's what I remember that the halacha says what you're saying. I don't see it inside. I want to find it. Because the chatchila, we still do that. But the yevet, if you didn't do it, so then I want to look it up. I think it says what you said.
Why not do the chatchila though?
Maybe for the same reason that Chazal didn't just say, go feel the temperature of the water. Chazal made a uniform system that would always work. I could tell you that I used to live in a top floor apartment when we first got married. And there were times that the water from the cold valve was so hot that you couldn't shower. It was in the summer, it was so broiling hot. So Chazal made a system that would work in every scenario. What you're saying is sometimes it's unnecessary. That's true. But when you're making a system, that's par for the course, that there will be times that because by virtue of the fact that it's a system, so it has to encompass even situations where it would be seemingly unnecessary. Okay, so now after we have this flat piece of dough, if we're going to put it in the oven, what's going to happen is it's going to rise and become like a pita. What's going to happen is the two sides of the dough are going to bake more quickly. The inside is going to bake more slowly. And you're going to have a situation that the two sides start separating. You have an air bubble in between. The outside gets baked. The inside is nice and soft and less baked. And that's what we call a pita. So what do? We take this instrument over here. And basically we roll over the matzah to make holes throughout the matzah. So now the air can get through, the heat can get in, and you have a situation where the matzah does not bubble up.
So how did the Jews, when they were going out of Egypt, have matzot if they did, you know, if they didn't use this?
Should I tell you the Medrash when I was a kid?
Sure.
When I was a kid, the Rebbe told us.
The actual science behind it.
Okay. And when I was a kid, the Rebbe told us that as the Jews were running out of Egypt, the Egyptians were shooting arrows at them, and the Jews had their bags of dough on their back, and the Egyptian arrows made all the holes in the dough to make the matzah. That's what the Rebbe said when I was a kid.
Okay, and what else could it have been?
You know, you remind me. A kid comes home and he says, "Dad, we learned about the Exodus today." So the father says, "Really, what'd you learn?" So he says, "Well, we learned they sent Apache helicopters, and they sent F-16s, and they sent special fighter jets, and the Jews were all organized with a special GPS system." And the father says, "Son, I know I sent you to Reform Day School, but this is what they taught you?" So the kid says, "Dad, I'll tell you the truth. This isn't what they taught you. But if you think this is marvelous, if I told you what they really taught me, you'd never believe me." Okay, so I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. So we make matzahs. They call this instrument redlach. Now, this is a new thing. This is a disposable thing. When I was a kid, so the instrument they had was this big machine, like this big. You could barely lift it. It had a lot of metal wheels like this that had really sharp spokes, and they would zoom it across the dough, going back and forth, making holes in it, which again, sounds easy, but it involves skill to ensure that the dough doesn't stick to the wheels and that the dough doesn't fold over and you end up having a folded over matzah. These people who do it are very skilled. One year, I decided to join a group that makes their own matzahs, and they put me in charge of making these holes. And I can tell you that the matzahs didn't come out so good, and it was my fault. I kept trying to get these to make holes, and I couldn't apply enough pressure, enough strength, to get it to really make holes. It sounds like it would be easy. Okay, it's not that easy. And when you'll see the guys doing it on Monday night, you'll see they're the pros. They go like 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's done. What? There's that gym on Monday. We're going to go, yeah, Monday night. So we can give this out. You guys can feel it and see it, play with it. These are disposables. This is a new invention. This is mamash, maybe 5 years that they're using this instrument.
I always cut myself on that.
Ah, okay. So don't cut yourself on it. They call it the redlach. Okay?
Wheels?
You'll see it. I don't know what redlach stands for.
Red is, I think, a wheel. Red, not
the oil. Okay.
Right, yeah.
Now, you will notice, yes.
Could I join one of those matzah making groups?
Sure, talk to Rabbi Lissman. And they do it in Beit Tel. And they're looking for volunteers. They Yeshivat Mekaz HaRav has those groups. And very often they need more people to work. okay, now, you will notice that the way the oven is set up is that it's in a different room, in a separate room from the room in which they make the matzahs. So here you have the guy in the front, or at the end of the table. He's making all the holes. After the dough is completely flat, he makes the hole. And the oven is in the next room. There's a little window where they could pass the matzahs through. But that's because, like we explained, the matzahs, so long as they stay cool, their fermentation is going to happen more slowly. Once they get warmer, so then they ferment more quickly. Being that we're going to work with a time limit of 18 minutes, so we want to ensure that the matzahs stay cool. It even says that if you walked into that room where the oven is, you have to wash your hands with cool water before you go and deal with the matzahs again. Because the fire is hot in the oven. And if you're in that room, your hands get warmer. And if your hands are warmer, so then you're going to make the dough warmer, and then the dough will ferment more quickly. So we are careful to wash our hands, even if just went from one room to the other. Here you see they passed him the matzahs, and he's going to put it in the oven. Now we use, here in Israel, we use olive wood, which is very, very hot, to light our fire in the oven. Here you see the oven. On the side, on the left, they have a fire. A big fire with the huge logs, like you saw in the previous picture. Olive wood logs. When we get to the matzah factory, you'll see that outside the factory, outside the matzah bakery, they have piles of these logs. I could tell you a tip.
What?
These logs. Olive wood logs. Just a pointer. What I do, every year after Sukkot, here in Israel, people have palm branches, which they throw out, and I collect them. Some of them I store to be used for schach next year. When the palm branches dry, they dry very nicely. If you just put them, if you raise them, if you make a pile off the ground, so they dry nicely and you could use them for schach next year, and then you got yourself good, cheap schach. And part of them I use whenever I have to make a barbecue, because palm branches are filled with palm oil. And the fire, that the leaves catch fire very easily. I light my barbecue, my mangal, with one match. I don't need one then, because I have all these palm branches that I break up, and the leaves are thin and they catch fire right away, and then I have the greatest fuel and the greatest logs, and I have everything I need. I add a few other pieces of wood, but the best starter for a fire is, the best starter I found, is palm branches, dried palm branches. So they're an excellent starter, an igniter for the fire. So again, coming back to our olive wood is filled with olive oil, and that makes a very hot fire. Now, it's not so clear that you want the fire that hot, because then you run the risk that the outside will be baked and the inside won't, even though the matzahs are very thin. Now, putting the matzahs into the oven and taking them out of the oven is also a very big skill. The people who do this get paid about 150 shekel an hour. It's considered a very high-skilled job. Again, you'll see them, they do it like pros, and it seems easy. But it's not only because they're standing next to the hot oven, it's also because it involves a lot of skill to set it out without causing any creases or any folds, and to take it out at exactly the right time. So that's what you see this guy over here taking the matzah out of the oven, and then they line up the matzahs, and here you see the matzah as it bakes on the floor. Here you see the fire on the left. This guy isn't looking at the camera, but you'll see him, Bezrat Hashem, on Monday night.
Victory, right?
Yeah, I think so. They're not willing to answer that question. And here you see the rabbi, right? The rabbi checking the matzahs, looking for folds.
Why don't we know?
What?
You don't know what matzah factory this is?
They don't tell you at the beginning of the book which matzah factory you're looking at.
They're not allowed to take pictures of the matzah.
They don't like that people take pictures of them. Now, they break off different parts that have folds and they put them in this box on the bottom. You have to remember that the matzah is usually chayav and challah. There's an obligation, it says in the Torah, that when you bake a certain volume of dough, you have to take off a piece and give it to the kohen. Today that our kohanim are impure and our food is impure, so it gets burnt, but you do have to take off challah. Now some people like to do that mitzvah on their own, so when you buy a box, sometimes the box will have a sign on it that says, lo hufrash challah, we did not take off challah. And then you have to do it. If you've bought a large enough volume, you could even do it with a blessing. Yes. They weigh the matzahs and you pay by the kilo. The standard rate this year is somewhere between 180 and 200 shekel a kilo. In a kilo, I think you have about 16 matzahs, 16 to 18 matzahs. So you're paying about 10 shekel a hand matzah. Okay, that's... And here you see the team cleaning off the tables. Like we said, you have two sets of tables. And they clean them off very well. Today it's very easy. You have stainless steel. It's not such a big deal. Why are we so careful to clean it? Because, like we said, if a little bit of dough remains, so that dough becomes chametz. If that little bit of dough goes into your matzah, so your matzah is no longer kosher for Passover. It is chametz. So that's why we're very careful to clean every instrument we're going to use. The red lach, these instruments that make the holes, well, we throw them out. That's how I got them, right? They finished one shift, and they gave me... the red lach from that shift, because each shift they use a new one. You could clean it, but it's not so easy. I was given that job. There was once a group that tried to save money, and they said, just clean it. And it's not so easy to clean all the dough in between all these wheels. It's easier said than done. The tables have to be clean. Everyone's hands have to be clean. Under the nails have to be clean. Under people's hand nails, fingernails. The basin has to be clean, the basin where you're going to make the dough. The tables on which you kneaded the dough with that metal pole also has to be clean. So there's a lot of work to do after you finish a shift. Again, we work in the way they work today is you have one shift on one table and then you shift to the other set of table while they clean the first set of tables. The poles on which they carry the matzahs to the oven, they usually line with paper, so that at the end of the shift, they could just take the paper off the pole, and they have a brand new, clean pole, which basically, again, they just line it with a new paper. So that's, in a nutshell, how we bake matzahs. What questions do we have? Yes, so the question is, what is shmura matzah? So we said that the Torah says, "Ushmartem et ha-matzot." I want you to watch the matzahs. And the question is, what did the Torah mean? Did the Torah mean you should watch the matzahs for the sake of the mitzvah? And that's one understanding we went with. Did the Torah mean you should watch the grains from becoming chametz beyond what you would ordinarily be careful for any other mitzvah? So if this were any other mitzvah, we would be careful, let's say, from the time I have packs of flour. And here I'm careful from the time I grind the wheat or from the time I harvest the wheat. And that's why we pay more money for shmura matzah. Shmura matzah means that the matzah, the kernels were watched either from the time of harvesting. It'll say shmura mishat ktsira. This was watched from the time of harvest to ensure it didn't come in contact with water. Watched for the sake of the mitzvah. Or else it'll say shmura mishat tchina. It was watched from the time it was ground into flour. So then that's one level down. And that's going to be cheaper. Or else it's not going to say shmura at all. It'll just say matzah kosher lepesach. And that'll be even cheaper. You could get 2.5 kilo of a regular matzah that's not shmura matzah for 38 shekel.
Is there a whole wheat shmura matzah?
There is. I was told that Rav Arush is selling whole wheat matzah this year. You could find out about that.
You also say hamotzi on spelt and rye matzah.
The five grains all get a hamotzi. And us Ashkenazim make a hamotzi on matzah all year round.
What about egg matzah?
Egg matzah is a different question which we will not deal with in this class. We will not deal with in this class. We will deal with it in the halacha class, Bezer Hashem, when we speak about the halachos of Pesach. So we'll also deal with the question of egg matzah. But that's not this topic. What? Bezrat Shem, yes. Any other questions?